Alec, thank you for being a part of this little bonus mini-sode, if you will. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the logical fallacies when it comes to contagion. What are some of the logical fallacies? And it's important because I think a lot of us don't know how to think critically anymore. You know, we weren't taught that in school, so we don't know how to really examine something carefully. Help us understand how to poke holes in almost anything, not even just the contagion theory.
So just like you're saying, I think it's really important for us to understand logical fallacies because then at that point we can sort of identify them and snuff out any bad argument or bad position or any narrative that they're trying to push and excuse for why they're pushing that narrative. So within the context of virology specifically, because that's, you know, what we covered in the main episode, I think that I'm going to use that as a way to sort of discuss some of these common logical fallacies that I see. So the first is an appeal to authority, and in an appeal to authority, the arguer is essentially claiming a perceived authority figure's position to support their claim or their argument. And an example of that would be Robert Malone is a vaccinologist, and he says the virus has been isolated, so you're wrong. Or the overwhelming majority of virologists say that a virus has been isolated, so you're wrong. Again, so that's an appeal to authority, and we see that one pretty frequently with virology. And then the next one is a bandwagon fallacy. I already kind of touched on that one with the overwhelming majority of experts thing, but a bandwagon fallacy is one where the arguer attempts to, you know, validate their position, support their position by referring to the majority's stance on that position. And of course,
As
we
if
hear
the
this.
majority was magically right every time.
And what we're finding,
History shows differently, right?
exactly. Yeah, what we've seen over the last 2.5 years and beyond. Actually, it's 3 years now. 3 years and beyond is that is overwhelmingly not the case. And the overwhelming majority of experts believe that the virus has been isolated, or the overwhelming majority of experts believe that the vaccines are good, or the any referring to any expert consensus or the consensus of a population or anything like that. That is a bandwagon fallacy. That's again referring to the majority's position on a topic as validation for your premise. This one's probably the most common, and it's a burden of proof reversal fallacy. And essentially, what that is it's when the arguer makes a claim that needs justification, but demands the opponent justifies the opposite of that claim. So an example of that is when we say, "You have no proof of these submicroscopic pathogenic particles." They'll say, "Well, where's your proof that viruses don't exist?" And that's akin to saying, "Well, where's your proof that unicorns don't exist?" Or, "Where's your proof that garden gnomes don't exist?" You're the one making the positive claim surrounding a virus. You're saying that a virus exists and that it causes disease and it mutates and does all these things. And again, you're required to provide proof of your positive claim. For those of us who are saying you have no proof of that claim, we're not required to provide proof of our opposing claim. You're the one making the positive claim, so the burden of proof lies on you.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and that one we see, you know, quite a bit is you can say, "Where's your proof that the vaccine's not safe and effective?" And of course, you can refer to like to things showing that you know, the vaccine is not safe and effective. But again, they're the ones that are claiming that it is safe and effective, and they have not proven that it is safe and effective. And that really applies for pretty much any vaccine.
That's right.
Another,
And even a Supreme Court justice said one time that they are
yeah.
unavoidably unsafe. And yet, there we go, just kind of repeating a catchphrase. I think we're very programmable in a way.
Yep. Oh my goodness. We are so programmable. And that's the safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective over and over and over again. Stay home, stay safe. Stay home, stay safe.
Stay
Of
home,
course.
save lives, which I'm like,
Yeah.
what? How does that work? But anyway.
It's ridiculous. So another one is begging the question slash circular reasoning. And I got to give credit to Dr. Andy Kaufman for this one. He's identified two primary ones with virology, but I'll just focus on one. A begging the question fallacy occurs when the conclusion of an argument or a position is assumed in one of the initial premises. So in the case of virology, they'll say that a virus is present inside the patient and that viruses cause cytopathic effect or viruses cause people to be sick, right? And then they'll go through that process of cell culture isolation where they're mixing in a bunch of things and there's a bunch of assumptions that I covered in the episode.
Yes.
And then the cytopathic effect occurs and then they'll say, ah, see, the cytopathic effect was caused by viruses that were present in the patient. They're already assuming that there are viruses present in the patient. They're already assuming that the viruses cause CPE without ever establishing either of those two things. And then when that thing happens, the cytopathic effect, they'll say, ah, that's proof that a virus was present inside the patient. It's circular reasoning.
Oh, yeah. And what's the other one he mentions, Andy?
The other one he mentions deals with specifically with the sequencing of the virus. They'll say that, you know, a virus has a certain like sequence, and then they'll assume that the virus is inside the fluids. They'll take all those fragments, they'll assemble it in the in silico sequencing process. They'll come up with this genomic sequence for a virus. They'll point back to it and say that that's proof of the virus.
Well, I have another question for you. I feel like reasoning can only take us so far. I've not been able to persuade someone who is convinced about contagion or vaccinations or what have you. It's very rare the moment when someone is open to another perspective. Have you seen anybody turn around when you
I actually have seen. First, I'll preface this by saying I don't think intellectualizing this or discussing this is the most effective way. Like overwhelmingly what woke people up, similar to me, probably similar to you, was an experience. It was an experience that woke people up to the fraud of allopathic medicine and sent us down this rabbit hole. And I have had two experiences. One was with a DO, and then another one was with an MD who were really pushing back on my views on contagion and virology and what have you. And I just kindly asked them, like, hey, dude, I know you're a really smart individual and you're very open-minded. Just please look into the foundational premises that you've, you know, been conditioned to believe in. Just question them. And they actually did turn their position around. Now, I can probably cite another 100 examples where I've talked with a scientist or a doctor and that wasn't the case. It did not change their perspective, but I have had two where it actually did change their perspective. And again, that requires that we approach them in a way where we're not using the same tactics that we are always so opposed and referring to when it comes to those who push the mainstream narrative, where they're calling us names and they're attacking us and all these things. If we can be kind, open, and just inspire curiosity, I think we can be effective. But I think more important than that is that these people require an experience. And what that may look like sometimes is something very hard. Like for all the people right now who are experiencing vaccine injury or a loved one experiencing vaccine injury or in worst cases, death, that is waking a lot of people up. And it's unfortunate, but sometimes that's what's required. And that's why I'm referring back to the episode that we recorded. I'm really big on helping to encourage people to understand the power of their own body, because that is something that is actionable that they can actually apply in their own life and see results. If we can help people understand, like, hey, I know multiple people that used to feel just like you do right now. You're chronically ill and you think you need these pharmaceutical products or this or that. And they simply came to understand their own power if they just treat their body as a temple, and they now are free of those chronic issues, and you can too. That's much more effective in my mind. Yeah. And that's something actionable that they can actually apply to their life without having to have the very negative experience of an injury to vaccines or something like that.
Right. Wow. That's a great, great word to end on. Thank you for being a part of the minisode and the other episode. We will send folks links. And I just love that we did this extra little bit, because I think you can try to, like you said, intellectualize the conversation, and it may get you nowhere if you don't approach it with love and compassion and with the idea that you can respect this person. Because after all, that's kind of what we were going for in the past few years too, is we're making a different choice. Respect us, we'll respect you as well. And that is more likely to lead us to a happier future, I believe.
Amen. Completely agree.